Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
Israel and Palestine is a tiny little piece of land when you look at the broader globe, but it is so absolutely critical to the whole issue of the way the U.S. is viewed in the world.
Medea Benjamin, founder of Global Exchange and co-founder of Code Pink, joins us to talk about the Gaza Freedom March planned for December 31st. Hundreds of people from various countries are now set to participate in this event designed to symbolically push open borders between Gaza and Egypt, calling attention to the poor living conditions of Palestinians. Earlier delegations of Code Pink found starving children in Gaza. They were in need of clean drinking water and working toilets. 1 year after Israeli airstrikes on this tiny strip of densely populated land, there is still a profound lack of medical care as Israel's blockade continues. Hospitals and schools were a major target of the Israeli Defense Force. Educational programs have slowed to a crawl. Among the dead, some 1,400 civilians, thousands wounded, most of them civilians and hundreds of them children. I asked Medea Benjamin to respond to recent headlines about Israel's decision to bulldoze more Palestinian homes, this time in eastern Jerusalem, to make way for some 900 new Israeli settlements.
Well, it's unconscionable that the international community has said that these settlements are illegal, that all of the human rights organizations around the world have condemned this, that the U.S. government has said that all settlements must freeze, and yet the Israelis take no heed and go ahead and keep building and keep demolishing people's homes. Nothing seems to stop the Israeli government from its hell-bent policy on continuing to dispossess the Palestinians from their homes.
How strong would you say the opposition is in Israel and America to this new settlement plan?
Unfortunately, there's not a strong enough opposition within Israel, but here in the United States, the sentiment is changing. It's quite remarkable that there is, even within the Obama administration, there are those who say we have to hold the line and continue to push the Israelis to freeze all settlements. When there was a pushback and Hillary Clinton said that Israel was making tremendous strides, she had to then step back from that position because of all the opposition. So on the one hand, you have a Congress that continues to be beholden to the Israeli lobby in the United States, most notably to AIPAC, but you have the American public opinion that is significantly shifting, and particularly after the Israeli invasion of Gaza, to become more aware of the problems of a U.S. policy that supports Israel unconditionally.
A lot of the media coverage has really been driven by extremes. There's this general discussion about peace talks, but most of the time we're talking about violence, Israeli security, not much changes there. Have you found that American audiences are more willing now to listen to your presentations about what you found in Gaza and how difficult it is for people to live there?
I think so. Every time we take a group, they come back absolutely shocked. We had a group that just came back last week from helping in the olive harvest in the West Bank, and they returned saying it was way worse than I ever could have imagined. That I thought when people likened it to apartheid, they were exaggerating. But we had people who were active in the anti-apartheid movement and said, this is worse than what I saw in South Africa. The day-to-day humiliation and deprivation is really beyond belief. And, of course, then the situation in Gaza, when we take groups there, they are just flabbergasted by the level of destruction and then by the ongoing siege that most people don't even know existed back in 2006 when Hamas first came to power and has only gotten worse over the years. So many people, when they go, they come back saying, I don't condone violence, but I sure understand why somebody would even go to the extreme of being a suicide bomber when they live under such humiliating conditions and when they see their loved ones being killed indiscriminately.
And I think that is exactly what I'm talking about, that there has been a lack of information about the lives of Palestinians. Now, I know a lot of what you do is try to bring information to American citizens, but also to members of Congress. Are you making any strides there? Because it seemed that there were a lot of signatures on that resolution to reject the Goldstone report.
Well, we are making some strides. It's sad that the Congress is so difficult to move on this issue, that during the bombing of Gaza, in the moment when the worst abuses were happening and civilians being killed by the hundreds, that was back in December and January of last year, there were only 5 people in the whole Congress who voted against a resolution supporting Israel's right to self-defense. So if you measure it by that, the fact that there were 36 congresspeople who voted against this most recent measure, which was to reject the Goldstone report, by that measure, it is progress. But it's also pretty pathetic to think that the vast majority of congresspeople did vote to reject a meticulously investigated report by a Judge Goldstone, a person beyond reproach, and that only said that this should warrant then further investigation and prosecution if indeed crimes had been committed, and that so many congresspeople felt compelled to reject that report, I think shows that we still have so much to do in order to create an alternative to AIPAC, in order to cover the backs of those congresspeople who are willing to visit Gaza, who are willing to go to the West Bank, and who are willing to come back and start speaking out.
Now, when you say alternative to AIPAC, I know a lot of people would think that that means J Street. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, J Street is one alternative, and as mild as it might appear, and one of the big disappointments for me of J Street was that J Street also criticized the Goldstone report and rejected it as being biased and distorted. But J Street is important to have and marks a political position that does start to give cover to some of those congresspeople who call for an even-handed approach with respect to Palestinian and Israeli rights. But there needs to be, and there are groups that are more progressive than J Street, and that includes a number of Jewish groups like Jewish Voice for Peace that is starting to have a presence not only on the West Coast where they've been quite strong, but also now in other parts of the country, including the East Coast and the Washington, D.C. area. So it's important that these new organizations or coalitions like the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation get strengthened in the coming months and the coming years in order to shift U.S. policy.
I want to mention the tour that you have helped organize for Israeli resistors. These are students, young people in Israel, who have rejected military service, which is mandatory there. And, you know, I'd just like to ask you about the effectiveness of their speaking tour in the United States.
They are perhaps the best spokespeople that we have had to talk to the American public, and particularly to talk to the young people. You know, there is this campaign that some of the Jewish organizations have called Birthright that takes people of Jewish ethnicity or religion to Israel to learn from the perspective of a very Zionist perspective. And they have taken 200,000 young people to Israel, given them a one-sided view that makes a lot of these young people come back and be in the mindset that Israel is the victim and that the Palestinians are the terrorists trying to destroy this one democratic country in the region. And so having young people from Israel come and talk to Hillel groups and talk to university students and go into synagogues was fabulous. And they learned a new perspective from very articulate young women, from women who had the courage of their convictions and even went to prison because of their convictions at the tender age of 18 years old, I think had a very big impression on the audiences that they met with. And as a result of their trip, we have a lot of young people in universities who are now joining us in some of the boycott campaigns, like the one we're doing around Israeli cosmetics called Ahava, joining us on the Gaza Freedom March that we're organizing in December, and hooking up with other groups on campuses that are doing some sort of Palestine solidarity work.
What kinds of projects are there for people to participate in or do at home if they support your efforts in Gaza?
Well, we're doing the biggest thing that we have ever done yet, and it's called the Gaza Freedom March, and it's happening on December 31st, marking the 1 year point when the Israelis invaded Gaza in December of last year. And we put it out as an idea in the spirit of Gandhi, nonviolent resistance, in the spirit of Nelson Mandela, and in the spirit of so many Palestinian efforts at nonviolent resistance, like the boycott campaign. And the response has been absolutely tremendous. We are creating something that we could not have really envisioned before. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are signing up on the website, which is GazaFreedomMarch.org, in order to go with us on this pilgrimage, I would say, to Gaza, to join with the civil society groups that are organizing students and professors and union members and people in the refugee camps and women's organizations. They say there'll be at least 50,000 people in Gaza who march with us coming in from the outside. And it looks like from the outside there will be about 1,000 of us. So this will be a huge march. Starting in the northern part of Gaza, we enter in through Egypt and walking to the Israeli border, and we will be greeted or met on the other side of the Israeli border by Arab and Jewish groups that are mobilizing on that side. So we're very excited about this, and particularly excited about the international network that's being created in the process of organizing this.
Do you think a more fair discussion about Palestinian rights as well as Israeli rights can promote peace not only in Israel and Palestine, but also in the entire region of the Middle East?
Israel and Palestine is a tiny little piece of land when you look at the broader globe, but it is so absolutely critical to the whole issue of the way the U.S. is viewed in the world. We should remember that one of the reasons that Osama bin Laden said he hated the United States was our unconditional support for Israel and support for the oppression of the Palestinians. And the election of Barack Obama was a moment of tremendous hope for people in the Arab world. I was in Cairo when Obama was speaking there, and it was amazing how people pinned their hopes in this new president to say he was going to be different, and not only in general towards a respectful relationship with the Arab world, but in changing the U.S. position vis-a-vis Israel, and nothing has come of that. So the hopes have been dashed, especially for the people in Palestine. And I think we have to force this administration to really go back to the earlier days when there was some expectations that things would be different. And the world is clamoring for it. And if we're ever going to be viewed in the Arab world as a friend of the Arab world, it won't be by speeches, it will be by actions. And one of those key actions will be to have a policy that shows respect for the Palestinians. When we continue to give $3 billion a year of U.S. tax dollars at a time of economic crisis here at home, knowing that those tax dollars are going to provide the bombs and the bullets and the tanks and the Apache helicopters and the gunboats that are killing people in Palestine, we have a responsibility to change that policy, to stop the flow of money, to use our leverage to force change within the Israeli government. Everybody thinks the U.S. calls the shots when it comes to Israel, and that if the Obama administration really wanted to freeze on settlements, they'd say, freeze the settlements, or, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, including the $3 billion, will be cut off. So we've got to force our government to use its leverage to force the Israelis to get serious about peace process.
The idea for the Gaza Freedom March was born in the last delegation where we brought 142 people into Gaza to see the...
A YouTube video from Code Pink demonstrates the remarkable success the group has had already in generating goodwill in Gaza. These are the sounds of a street festival organized in large part by Palestinian young people who are also being celebrated by their American friends.
And when I saw what was happening on the internet, I said the only way that we can bring this great Gaza Freedom March off is I called the young people of Palestine, my good friends Dima and Mon, and I said, please help us.
Part of the agenda is to show that Palestinian kids are as lovely as children anywhere, and indeed they are, as they smile and hold tiny banners saying Free Palestine. But according to Medea Benjamin, what they need is an end to the blockade that has prevented their families from getting enough food, medical supplies, and other needed goods. Palestinians have traditionally farmed the land now being developed by Israel. They could also benefit from some of the tourism dollars Israel claims annually as people from all over the world visit holy sites in Jerusalem and other places in dispute. But for the most part, Palestine's economy has collapsed. Israelis, on the other hand, are enjoying economic wealth. This is a clip from a World Focus report on high-tech industries in Israel in areas being called the New Silicon Valley.
AT&T, Cisco, and Motorola are employing the system on TV and data networks in over a million homes throughout the U.S. That number is growing exponentially every month. Coppergate is one of the many high-tech sagas here. American corporate giants like Microsoft, Intel, and Motorola have invested billions of dollars into R&D centers in Israel to capitalize on the creativity of many thousands of Israeli engineers and scientists. In 2007, 46% of Israel's $34 billion in industrial exports came from high tech.
The U.S. has given Palestinian leaders about $300 million in economic aid, with some earmarked for police training in 2009. America also gave about $61.5 million in emergency humanitarian aid through UN agencies and the International Committee of the Red Cross after Operation Cast Lead. It's not enough for a population of between 3 and 4 million people to replace their economy and sustain themselves. And rights groups have suggested Palestinians could do far better if allowed to use their own natural resources currently under Israeli control. It's a David and Goliath standoff, according to peace activists who criticize the far greater sum of $3 billion in annual aid to Israel. The Israeli economy has become global, and there's a huge incentive now for military industries, communications companies, weapons companies, and other high-tech companies to support a robust American aid program for Israel. It brings a lot of goodwill, and they benefit from it. The question is, how do these U.S. tax dollars help or harm American security? We asked Medea Benjamin to comment on the money situation and the question of how America's financial bias toward Israel impacts U.S. forces who are on the front lines to receive any anger from those who might support Palestinians rather than Israelis in the Mideast.
I think the Israelis, as huge weapons producers and sellers, this tiny little country accounts for such a large proportion of the weapons, the relationships between the intelligence services, between our militaries, the monies that we give the Israelis to buy more weapons actually makes us less secure, not more secure. And the United States, of course, is the biggest purveyor of weapons around the world, has a military, if you count in not only the $636 billion of the defense budget, but also Homeland Security, Veterans Affairs, and the Energy Department money that is used for nuclear weapons, we have about $1 trillion a year budget, which is larger than all of the rest of the world combined. So between the United States and Israel, the focus on military gives an upper hand to the military contractors, the weapons producers, the people who literally profit from war. And their profiting from war is to the detriment of our security and the security of the people around the planet. So I think severing the ties with the Israeli defense and cutting the U.S. funds to the Israeli military would be a tremendously positive step towards building greater security here at home.
I want to play a clip now from the website of Media Matters, mediamatters.org, and they track the media. With U.S. elections approaching for members of Congress, most White House policies are being sensationalized by the for-profit media, including, of course, the question of trying Guantanamo prisoners in New York City. Here is a caller to a Florida radio program with Glenn Beck fill-in Pat Gray. And the suggestion is that President Obama is intimidated by foreign Muslims and cares more about that than American voters.
Knowing a criminal tribunal would result in death, he'd have a lot of splaining to do to the Arab world, the Muslim world. If he brings it into a criminal venue, then all bets are off. The intricacies and idiosyncrasies of a criminal trial, i.e., they haven't been Mirandized, they get off on a technicality, and oops, guess what? He doesn't have any explaining to do to the Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
The criminal justice system in the U.S. takes care of it for him.
Pat Gray chimes in his agreement.
You would think he'd be more worried about explaining to his, I don't know, citizens in his own country who...
Do you really think he cares?
No, I don't think he does.
No, so he's more afraid of what his Muslim buddies are going to think.
Yeah, I think it's probably, there's something to that.
And so the question is, what kind of organizing has the American peace movement, you know, at large been engaging in to counter these kinds of flimsy arguments being raised among Tea Party supporters? I mean, let's say we have bigger arguments to be brought about U.S. foreign and military policy or Guantanamo or any of this. But this woman caller indicated she was a Tea Party supporter. The Tea Party advocates and right-wing politicians are very well organized with use of the internet, you know, Republicans. And clearly, there is this effort to torpedo the Democrats' chances in upcoming elections. So the question is, what would you say to peace activists now about the importance of strengthening their movements in America, but also about taking on the Obama administration about issues like this?
I think the Obama administration needs, and I actually think it would benefit from, a much stronger progressive movement, whether we're talking about health care, that we didn't manage to force the administration and Congress to even give us the platform to talk about Medicare for All in a serious way, or whether the continued existence of Guantanamo, when Obama said that it would be closed by the end of this year and it's still not going to be, or the issue of his surge in Afghanistan. If we had a stronger movement, the administration would be more able to fight back against the forces on the right that want to keep the U.S. beholden to insurance companies and to the war machine. And I was at the Eric Holder hearing where he was there to justify bringing five of the Guantanamo prisoners to trial in New York, and they brought in some of the 9/11 families that had three entire rows of the hearing, and there were a couple of us from Code Pink, a couple of people from the human rights organizations, and I just thought, you know, we need to be packing these hearings. We need to be showing the teabaggers that we can out-organize them. And 1 year now since the Obama election, people have to start feeling comfortable about getting out and pushing this administration in all kinds of ways. And whether or not you like Barack Obama is not the issue. It really is, if you want the administration to take good positions on issues, they've got to be pushed by a strong, effective, mobilized, organized progressive movement.
Anyone leading the way in Congress right now whose policies on the Middle East or on any of the subjects you just mentioned you're particularly happy with or particularly unhappy with?
There are some very brave congresspeople in this atmosphere who have actually traveled even to Gaza, like Congressman Baird from Washington State, who is in the district of Cindy and Craig Corey, whose daughter Rachel was killed in Gaza by an Israeli bulldozer. Also, the first Muslim elected to Congress, Keith Ellison, has been very good on these issues. Dennis Kucinich is consistently good on these issues. Certainly, Barbara Lee from Oakland, the new Congresswoman Donna Edwards from Maryland, who has in her first year gone to the Middle East and taken very good positions. So there are some congresspeople that we work with. Lynn Woolsey just gave us a letter of support today for the Gaza Freedom March that we can take to the Egyptian government, very important for us. These people need our help. Donna Edwards, for example, when she went to Gaza and came back, she found that AIPAC was already organizing in her district to paint her as anti-Israeli, as anti-Semitic, to run somebody against her in the Democratic primary. And she then said to the progressive community, hey, you've got to come out and support me, and called town hall meetings, invited people to come, and I think is really giving the challenge to the progressives to say, if I'm going to step out there for you and do the right thing on these issues, you got to be there for me.
Medea Benjamin, Global Exchange and Code Pink, now active also in Gaza, taking tours there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. And anybody interested, please look at GazaFreedomMarch.org. And if I can add one thing, it's we're also asking people to do solidarity actions during that week between December 27th, the day of the invasion, and December 31st. And we can send you a whole lot of very, very simple ideas of things you can do with a handful of other people to show your support and join with people all over the world who will be doing actions during that week.
Medea, just mention a few of the things you're talking about.
We have a whole list of things that people could do that go from making phone calls to film showings to hosting a small house party to going with a group and doing some creative way of spelling out Free Gaza and posting it on our site. So we'll have these photos from all over the world that we will show people inside Gaza to show them that they are not alone. There's, of course, marches. There's a group in San Francisco that's already planning a simultaneous march. They'll be walking across the Golden Gate Bridge. There's all kinds of actions, from very simple things where you only need a couple of your friends to larger rallies and marches. But the important thing is to do something so that we can put these up on the website. And the people of Gaza really need to know that they are not alone. The Palestinians really need to know that there are people all over the world who care about them and who are determined to work for their basic human rights.
The website, again, is GazaFreedomMarch.org. Medea Benjamin, we'll follow your progress as you head back to Gaza.
Thank you.
Clearly, Medea Benjamin could have made her fortunes running a for-profit company. Instead, she staked her future and the future of her family on the ability of peace groups to win a better world for the next generation. She is a co-founder of both Code Pink and the international human rights organization Global Exchange. That group has taken on the WTO, World Trade Organization, and unfair trade practices in various countries where sweatshops have been a problem. Medea Benjamin is a former economist and nutritionist with the UN and World Health Organization, and she has edited 8 books. Right now, leaders of peace and justice organizations, as well as environmental groups, are trying to do outreach to members and get them back into action to push President Barack Obama to work toward transformation, a conversion from a wartime economy to a peacetime economy, from a wartime media to a peacetime media. Throughout 2010, we'll be offering specials focusing on individual leaders like Medea Benjamin and on groups trying to wage peace, working toward disarmament, a green energy future, and more fair trade and employment practices. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated nationally through Pacifica Network. We're online at talknationradio.org and .com. You can write to us at talknationradio@gmail.com, and we're available at Facebook and Twitter. Our music is by Fritz Heed, fritzheed.com.